of the cases I've been involved in over the years, that the Walker case was, in my opinion, the most egregious case of an injustice. You see, Walker was easily convictable. I mean, he'd been in some trouble back in Reno. He was young. He was a young, you know, punk kind of guy. And so whatever happened on the highway that night, he was the obvious and easy way to explain it.
This is Ozarks at Large. We'll explain what you just heard in a minute. First, let me welcome back to Ozarks at Large Randy Dixon, who is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Randy, welcome back.
Happy Monday, Kyle.
Happy Monday to you. We are going to continue what we started last week.
Yes, the case of James Dean Walker.
So before we hear more this week, why don't you give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what we've covered last week?
Well, you heard there at the beginning, Mike Masterson. He's an investigative journalist and columnist for the Democrat Gazette. And he wrote extensively about James Dean Walker, who was a two-time convicted cop killer from the early 1960s and was eventually set free. And we sort of reviewed the case last week, and we thought maybe we would look at the case one more time or again, especially with some questions that Mike Masterson had about the evidence and some discrepancies that were involved in the case. So he can sort of pick up the story and explain why he was arrested in the first place.
James Dean Walker was a young, nice-looking man who came from Reno to visit, and he was hanging out with a guy named Russell Cumpy, and they visited a nightclub in Little Rock, got in a fight. He pistol-whipped a guy. He had a pistol with him. The police called, they called the police department, and they ran into North Little Rock onto a highway just outside of North Little Rock, and a cab driver had followed them, picked up the radio traffic and had followed them. So the police caught up with James Dean Walker and Russell Cumpy along that road, and the arriving officer, Gerald Vaughn, parked right behind them, got out of his car, walked around to the side. Walker was not driving. He was a passenger. The passenger light the door came open. He was talking to him. And another car, police car, with Gene Barentine, Officer Barentine, in it, pulled up. And he had parked just to the left of Gerald Vaughn's car. And got out and took his gun out. Well, he was standing there, and when the Walker car door opened, the light came on, Walker swung around, and he had his gun in his hand, but he had it between his fingers and his thumb. He was holding it up by the handle as if to hand it to the cop. At that point, Gerald Vaughn, the police officer, screamed, "He's got a gun," and began shooting. Well, he ended up shooting Walker five times, and Gene Barentine began blasting away from behind, blasting out the back window and putting bullets in the trunk. And Walker slumped out onto the ground on top of this pistol that had not been fired.
So he does point out some of the discrepancies in the case, and he was convicted once, sentenced to death, convicted a second time. He was allowed a second trial, and he escaped. And once he was arrested again out west in South Lake Tahoe, he was brought back to Arkansas, and he stood trial again. And the young prosecutor at the time was Chris Piazza, who now is a retired circuit judge, who I talked to earlier, and he talked about, I guess, the many questions that were involved with trying this case again.
There was also the allegation that he was shot by friendly fire. James Dean and his partner had picked up a couple of gals at the old Citizens Club on Main Street in Little Rock and ended up in some fight outside of that place. And Little Rock police got after him, chased him to North Little Rock, and then radioed North Little Rock. And Gerald Vaughn was a police officer, and he followed him down the old England Highway. And when it stopped, they got out, and there was a gunfight between James Dean and officers. And there was the allegation by some that maybe one of the North Little Rock's own officers had fired the shot that hit Officer Vaughn.
That's Chris Piazza, who was the prosecutor in the second James Dean Walker trial, which also resulted...
No, the third.
The third, that's right, the third.
Yes.
That's the one that resulted in the plea deal. The first two resulted in the murder convictions.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that later. There ended up being a plea deal that set him loose. But a little bit of background on the trial. James Dean Walker certainly had his supporters, and I talked to longtime news director Jim Pitcock from KATV, and he covered him extensively, and he talks about sort of the upcoming trial.
And Walker was this good-looking young guy, and he was very articulate, and after the first trial, there was a group, and perhaps this is the reason that he got this following. There's this group that believed that Walker was innocent, even though the jury, and this was about a year after the shooting, the jury had found Walker guilty of first-degree murder, and the judge, William Kirby, sentenced him to death by the electric chair. And at the time, the movement to get rid of capital punishment was in its infancy. Most of the states still had capital punishment laws, and of course, Arkansas did.
Jim Pitcock, who was news director for a long time at KETV, and this reemphasizes that as this stretched out from 1963, the night of the murder, all the way through really the mid-80s, this was a story that captivated Arkansas newspaper readers and television watchers.
Yes, well, and nationally, too.
Yeah.
He had supporters... especially out west, and as a matter of fact, Mike Farrell, the actor, you know, from MASH.
Who played B.J. Honeycutt.
Yes, exactly. He was one of his supporters and even came to a couple of hearings. But one thing that Judge Piazza told me, which I had never realized, and as a matter of fact, Jim Pitcock hadn't either, he had his strong supporters out west, too, because as a policeman who had arrested him, you know, and before his extradition back to Arkansas, he was known as the Pied Piper of Reno. He was apparently a cocaine dealer to the stars, from what Judge Piazza told me.
Hmm.
So he had some, I guess, rich supporters out west that he used to supply with cocaine, allegedly.
Oh boy.
So
right.
Piazza is now, yeah, he has this dumped in his lap as a prosecutor, and it's a more than 20-year-old case, and so he has several dilemmas, especially with missing evidence.
it's almost 20 years after the homicide, and of all things, a federal court says we had to retry James Dean Walker. And so I started trying to, I read the transcript, which was so old, it was all yellow. And I started trying to find evidence. The first thing I tried to find was the gun that James Dean Walker had, and I was nowhere around. And I talked to someone who said the last time they saw that gun, Judge Kirby, who was the trial judge over that trial, had it in his drawer. And when he had a bunch of weapons, he collected them as a hobby. And when he died, his wife gave them all away. And I searched. I talked to several people. We couldn't even find the murder weapon, let alone any of the evidence.
Wow. I mean, this is...
How do you try a case without a gun?
Well, right. How do you?
Right. And so he had to compromise. And he came up with the idea that, well, since, you know, he was there... and these crimes occurred, he could be charged with manslaughter. So he got together with Walker's attorneys, and they agreed that he plead guilty to manslaughter, and that's maximum sentence, in this case, was 10 years. Well, he'd already served 20. So along with the escape, he was set free.
Wow.
And so, you know, I'll talk to Judge Piazza about, you know, the difficulty. And he actually had a personal connection to the North Little Rock Police Department. He had he knew several of them and had worked with them extensively when he was a clerk on the Supreme Court, and this is what he had to say about that.
But I knew some of the officers who were there at the scene that night, and I was really good friends with, you know, the chief of police and a lot of those officers, and they're good people. And I had a significant careful, but when you're a prosecutor, you've got to put aside any friendships and loyalty, and you have to look at the case from an objective point of view. And I think I could do that, and did, I think.
Did you have your doubts about either his guilt or innocence?
Well, I just didn't know. I mean, I knew that he got out of a car shooting at police officers, and I knew that one officer was shot and killed. And because of the lack of evidence, I mean, he didn't even know where the gun was, let alone all the bullets. Plus, they had a terrible time during the trial of introducing the evidence because of the chain of custody. And the judge even stopped the trial and told the prosecutor to get their stuff together. And it was a different time period that thing was tried. And I think we were a little more sophisticated by the middle 80s, and even more so now.
And again, there is no, at no point during this entire unfolding saga was there a claim that the shootout didn't happen, that Walker wasn't in vicinity of the fight that started at the nightclub, or even when the shooting rang out from the car.
That's correct. He was there, and you know, because he was there, he contributed to
right.
the incident. So
now, one of the interesting, compelling elements of this story is his time away from Arkansas after the escape, when he went to speak to a church group and never returned and took off. When he was finally captured in South Lake Tahoe, Jim Pitcock got on a plane and went out and interviewed him?
Yes. And he, I think, as I mentioned last week, he jumped through a lot of hoops to land the interview. He worked with attorneys and sheriffs and authorities to be able to sit down with him, and he did. And we don't have that interview right now, unfortunately, but it is in Pennsylvania at the Media Preserve, and this is the company that's digitizing everything for the Pryor Center, and they are putting a rush job on the Jim Pitcock interview with James Dean Walker. So hopefully within the next week or two, we'll be able to feature that interview on this program.
All right. Well, we'll wait for them to get the process finished. In the meantime, we'll still visit archives from the Pryor Center almost every Monday, won't we?
Yes, we will. I look forward to it.
Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Put Pryor Center into a search engine and, you know, unhook the phone and spend some time with Arkansas history there. Randy, as always, thank you.
Thank you. I'll talk to you next week.